Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Jacob and Bree are here. No Aki. What do you think's up with that?
I wish she were here.
I think she exploded from the hot sauce.
I thought you were going to say from like orgasms or something.
Well, she did say something about visual novels.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
You know, we're going to have a kids game on this episode, Jacob.
Yeah, that's true.
The episode artwork has goosebumps on it.
Should we? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, have you started recording yet?
Yes.
I didn't hear you do the "What's up, everybody?"
How did you miss that?
I don't know. You just start talking and I just start tuning out. You know how it is. I love you.
So how's everyone's week?
Pretty good.
I mean, my neck's okay.
Yeah. Mine's kind of stiff. I don't know. We should probably get in the news. There was obviously something huge happening, something big going on this week that has everybody talking. We can't ignore on the show. We need to address it. We need to talk about it. Tomorrow, Nintendo Direct. What do you guys think is going on?
I don't know, but it's the 40th anniversary for Mario, so it'd be really cool if there was a big reveal.
I would like to see Mario All-Stars 3D come back again, because I never got to buy it digital the first go-around, and now carts are like $100.
Yeah. I'll sell you my cart.
Do you have it?
Yeah.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we got it when Jess got a Switch, because nice. Nintendo had announced, like, you know, once this date happens, like, we're not printing anymore. And so I was just like, you know, the date came because I was expecting a sale because I was young and naive and didn't realize that Nintendo never puts anything on sale, actually. Yeah. And so, like, the date came and there were still no discounts. And I was like, Jess, we're going to buy this thing. And she was like, okay. And so we bought it. Yeah, and now the kids are playing Super Mario Galaxy, and I think my youngest is on Super Mario Sunshine.
Nice.
Yeah, he like both kids really enjoy it.
Galaxy is such a good game.
Galaxy
2 on another package.
I mean, that would be cool. I mean, my thing.
Nazzy.
My thing is that I can't really play. I can't really play Switch games because my hands cramp because of the controller. And I mean, we did buy like the one that's like closer to being an Xbox, but I'm going to be honest. I got so much stuff to play on my own Xbox. Never even mind the Switch. So I just almost never get around to doing anything on there.
Oh, yeah. If you look at our game lineup tonight, you could tell. What was that, Brie?
Oh, I don't play my Switch very often either because my neck ends up hurting from, like, looking down at the screen.
Yeah. I had neck issues for a long time as a kid because I played the Game Boy so much.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we're going to hear about Metroid Prime. I think they're going to be like, it's out next week. Woo!
That would be cool.
I think it would. Or Shadow Drop it.
Yeah.
Blow everyone's mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be cool.
You would.
Any other predictions for the Nintendo Direct? I'm not like too crazy hyped about this one. I don't know what to expect.
I'm not gonna lie, you know, it would be fun to see what the Vegas odds for a new F-Zero getting announced would be. Like, just put like $5 on it, and then all of a sudden Nintendo announces it, and like, you know, I'm now like I got $2 million.
You put $5 that's down. My dream. Instead, they like bring out Ice Climbers too.
Here's a new game featuring Rob.
Mock Rider is back like you've never seen before.
I've never seen it before, so that's technically correct.
Urban Champion, the revenge. Oh, man. PlayStation Evil Plus. 5. No. No. Bad. PlayStation Plus game catalog for September 16th got announced. They're getting some good stuff in their catalog. It's a good month for them.
Okay.
WWE 2K25.
Nice.
Persona 5 Tactica.
Oh.
Green Hell.
Ooh.
Eight Samurai Remnant. Hockey would like that one.
Never heard of it.
Fro Country.
Okay.
The Invisible, or Vincible, The Invincible.
Oh, okay. I like that one.
Conscript.
Don't know what that one is.
I think it's another survival horror-ish kind of thing. Premium is only getting one classic with Legacy of Kain Defiance for the PS2.
That's cool.
Only one is kind of weak, though.
Hmm.
Yeah, weak sauce. Did y'all hear Acclaim is back?
I did, and they've got like 9 new games announced.
Yeah, and like none of them are IPs we've ever heard of.
I didn't even check out the list. I just saw the headlines. What's the
let's go through what they have. They have a game called Toss Down for PC and console, where you deliver packages in a world where everything is out to kill you.
Okay.
That could be cool. Ground Zero Hero is an action roguelite with survival elements set in an apocalyptic wasteland. You battle mutant freaks, absorb their radioactive guts, eat a lot of candy. So I'm guessing like survivors, like vampire survivors or something.
Okay.
Basketball Classics, 5-on-5 backup ball, Hoopy Hoops. It's on PC now, coming to Switch.
Is it like NBA Jam or something?
No, it's like NES basketball.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
8-bit basketball.
Oh. Mm.
Pixel Washer is going to hit PC and console, and it is basically Power Wash Simulator in 8-bit.
Hmm.
Which could be interesting. Yeah. The Prisoning, Fletcher's Quest. You enter the mind of a game developer on the brink of physical and emotional burnout during the final stages of a project, and you must escape your perilous mental prison in a Metroidvania, Purnell's favorite term, drenched in anxiety based on a very true story.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Grid Beat, PC and console. A rhythm-fueled cyber dungeon crawler where every move must match the music or risk total system shutdown. Purnell game.
Okay. Yeah.
The system is down. System is down.
Yeah, yeah. Talaka? We can't hear like any of that. You're just...
No. It's okay.
We know. Talaka is a fast-paced, combat-driven roguelite that brings Afro-Brazilian mythology to life in a vivid, hand-painted world unlike anything you've ever seen.
Okay, that sounds like it could be cool.
There's one, Katanot, that we just covered on the last episode. I actually had to go in and re-record the intro to add a claim to the publisher list.
Oh.
Because they didn't announce that Acclaim was part of it until the day it came out.
Hmm.
That was like one of their shadow launches.
Yeah.
So we just had Void Ma as the info, and Acclaim published. Andy talked about that on the last episode. He says it's like Dead Cells in space.
Hmm.
Wasn't the greatest. I don't know. If it comes to console, or it's supposed to come to console, hopefully we'll take another look at it. And then, Jacob, you will love this one. Hyper Yuki Snowboard Syndicate.
What the hell's that about?
Welcome to the Snowboard Syndicate. Race, compete, and explore the slopes as a colorful cast of unique characters. But what's snowboarding without a little bit of drip? And Riz, I guess. Through exploring and racing, you can unlock cosmetics and such designs for your snowboard and clothes to make sure you shine the brightest while shredding. And it looks very, very much like SSX.
Ooh, all right. I'm there.
With like a jet set visual.
Okay. I'm very interested then.
Yeah, that is, I think that's the best looking one of the group.
Okay.
Yeah. Nintendo has run out of replacement parts for the new Nintendo 2DS XL, which were the final models that they could still support. So the entire 3DS system lineup, can't repair them anymore. Done.
Yikes.
Parts are gone. Yeah.
So like, nobody's gonna make, like, more parts?
Not official parts, no.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean, that's shitty.
Like third-party people might create parts, but
right.
Nintendo is done servicing them officially.
Damn.
Yeah. EA is shutting down online services for 4 games on March 16th with Dirt Showdown, Dirt 3, Grid Auto Sport, and Grid 2 all going bye-bye.
Hmm.
I believe they're all 360 generation.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't remember if Dirt 3 is, but I know the other two are.
Yeah. I think a few of them are backward compatible. I mean,
that I'm
looking up Dirt 3 now.
I mean, if you didn't get them already, then you're kind of screwed, but
why?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could find them on disc. But, well, you can't buy them anymore, I don't believe.
Mm.
Unless they're compatible, which the Dirt 3 is.
All 4 of them are backward compatible.
Oh, well, splendid.
Right. And I believe Auto Sport is still purchasable.
Do you need online pass for them, though?
I don't know.
Okay.
No, I'm not too sure. I don't remember which games of those needed what, but... Yeah, if you have discs, they'll still work fine. So, let's see. Panzer Dragoon 2 is getting a remake, and it has been announced for Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. Hitting everything.
All right.
Yay. And then the last bit of news I have, some sad news. Masashi Kageyama, the composer of Gimmick, has passed away at 62. After a battle with stomach cancer.
Jeez.
No, Chris was pretty bummed about that news.
Yeah.
Considering he has a band named Gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Aki, what news do you have? Wait, we have a button. We have a button. Yeah. Bree, what news do you have?
I have movie watch news.
Oh, we got another button. It's movie watch. There.
All right. Well, you might have already heard that Netflix is set to make a BioShock movie, but they've now confirmed it is based on the first game, not just the world. The script is being worked on now, and it'll be directed by Francis Lawrence after he's done with the next Hunger Games movie.
There you go.
And then TV news. Amazon MGM Studios. I know. Amazon MGM Studios has greenlit a Life is Strange TV series from creator showrunner Charlie Covell. Square Enix, Story Kitchen, and Lucky Chap are set as producers. And that's all the news I have.
Cool. I saw something else from Square Enix today. Let me pull this up quick. They're investing in a new platform, an online demo service. It is called Spawned, SPAWND. And their goal is to have online game demos that are embeddable into websites and social media posts, basically like a YouTube video that you play with a controller. And it's
interesting.
Yeah, like full-on game. They have, oh God, let me mute this tab. Their site, stupid sounds. They have demos of Chris Tales, CrossCode, Doom 3, Super Hot, Monster Sanctuary, Valferis, a couple of others, Vampire Survivors. They aim to have like 100 titles in the coming months. So they just soft launched, but yeah, Square is getting involved in investing in it.
All right.
There you go. Jacob, any news?
I do not have any news.
What?
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
You son of a bitch.
I already, like, you know, last week I already talked about all the Disney Dreamlight Valley stuff, so.
That is true.
Yeah.
I missed it? Aw, man.
Well, if you need me to repeat it again.
No, let's get talk about review. let's move on. Our next topic is like half news, half review. We're going to take a look at the Space Marine 2 Year 2 DLC release season pass. This is developed by Saber Interactive and published by Focus Entertainment. It released September 5th as DLC for Warhammer Space Marine 2 for $39.99. Receive new armor, weapons, and champion cosmetics from your favorite Space Marine chapters, and save money on additional content with Season Pass 2. Content can be downloaded from the store or in-game upon release. Obviously, we can't talk about everything that's in this right now because it's a Season Pass. Available right now included, you get a champion pack, and an Imperial Fists cosmetic pack. The Fists cosmetic pack is like all yellow, which looks kind of cool. You're like a mustard warrior beating shit up. I support it. And then there's the Black Templars champion pack. Just another power armor skin for the Bulwark class. Use it in Operations in Eternal War. Packs coming in the future. Later on this year, they're going to have the Blood Angels Champion Pack and the Salamanders Cosmetic Pack. Next year in Q1, they will have the Raven Guard Champion Pack, the, oh God, I don't know that word, Caradons? Picharadons? God, I don't know, a cosmetic pack, and then an Iron Hands chapter pack, so more story action content, which is obviously where the meat of this season pass is going to come from. And then in Q2, they will have a Raptors cosmetic pack and a redacted champion pack, which kind of makes you wonder what's going to be in that. To go along with that, they had a 10th anniversary update, or no, not 10th anniversary, a 10.01 year anniversary. This game's 10 years already. a 10.01 year anniversary update came with two new game modes with Hellbrute Onslaught, which is PvP, and Stratagems, which is PvE, new operation, new war map, bunch of new weapons and cosmetics, armor pack for all classes, new enemies in the game, new balancing they have in there, and then, of course, Season Pass 2 that comes with all the future content. If you played the game and went through the first Season Pass, you basically kind of have an idea what you're getting into with this. There's a lot of skins. There's a lot of cosmetics. The main meat, the chapter pack, I don't know if that's going to be worth $40, because if you're not into cosmetics, that's all that's really there for you.
Mm.
Now, like the champions and the cosmetics, that's going to be hit or miss for people. But it all comes down to Q1 and that Iron Hands chapter pack, and to see how that turns out, if that's going to be worth it. I think when that rolls around, well, have a better idea on the value of the season pass. Right now, I wouldn't say it's worth picking up right now unless you just need those cosmetics. These things go on sale frequently, and by the time Q1 rolls around, it might go down to 30 or 20. So I think I would hold off on buying this for now. See how the chapter expansion comes out in Q1. I don't know if that'll be like January or like later March, April, whatever. But when we hear about the chapter pack, I think we could talk about this more in depth. But for now, I'd save your money and wait.
Sounds good.
Rock on. Next game, Scarlet Salvation. Developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Nelio. Published by Idea Factory International. Released September 2nd on Series X and S and Xbox PC for $59.99. When Willow Martin awakens with no memories in an unfamiliar room, she can't figure out how she got there. Without any semblance of who she is or where she came from, can she trust the AI who aids her? Can any of us trust AI, really? Or is it her enemy? So begins her deadly battles against mechanical weapons in a bid to escape. But what truths lie at the end? Aki checked this one out on Steam a while back. Jacob, you're going to talk about it on Xbox. Tell us, what is going on in Scarlet Salvation?
So Scarlet Salvation is a third-person shooter where you're running around as this woman who has no previous memories of what's going on. And it appears that she's able to die multiple times. And you're being helped by this voice that doesn't really make himself all too clear, nor does he really let you know what's going on. I mean, he'll reveal stuff as the story goes on, but it's up to you to get from point A to point B on each floor. And what it is you seem to be in some sort of former military installation where all the humans are dead, and all that are left is the security robots, which of course are going to kill you. And you go around collecting weapons, and you can only carry two weapons at a time, which I thought was kind of annoying, but at the same time you have infinite ammo. So as long as like you're regularly upgrading your stuff, it shouldn't be too bad.
I did find it confusing about like which weapon is on the ground and which one you're holding. Like I messed up a bunch of times dropping the wrong weapon and running away and be like, ah, shit, this isn't the gun I wanted.
Yeah, that happened a couple of times. And also, like, when you die, you only carry, or you only bring forward the gun that's in your current slot. And so whatever
your slot, isn't it?
Oh, is that how it works? That makes sense. I believe
it's your backup weapon that you keep.
Oh, God.
And your main weapon. So, like, you gotta, if you're getting close to death, switch weapons and drop the Garbo one you got.
Okay, that makes sense then, because that did happen to me, and I was just like, oh, I must have just switched out guns. Like, because I would regularly do that as, like, you know, I was waiting for them to reload. And so I guess, and like, the one time I did die, I guess I just, like, I figured that, oh, I must have had my shotgun on me or something like that at the time. Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure explains it's your backup weapon that you keep.
Okay. Well, I worked with a long rifle most of the time and a shotgun as my backup, and I was mowing down robots constantly, and they do provide multiple different styles of their attacks. Like, usually it's all these like little energy weapons or explosives and stuff like that. But a lot of them also have the ability to teleport, which can get kind of, you know, it makes things really hectic as you're shooting up all these robots, and all of a sudden one of them just spawns right behind you. There were plenty of times where I was like, and my wife was just like, what's wrong? Like, I'm being attacked by robots.
Jump scares an anime game.
And not the way that you think. But yeah, so there is also a story that you can find out by these little mission dossiers, that you can, not dossiers, but like, file folders that you can find spread out all over the, installation, but they are few and far between. And yeah, it's just, you go through each floor, go into all the rooms, blast robots, upgrade your stuff, heal, and then go up to the next floor, repeat, and try not to die. I did have fun with this, but it really does not do a lot to change how things look. And I get that they're going for the military installation thing, and I get that, like, you don't have any idea how many floors there are, but it's just like, ooh, now it's icy. Like, okay. Like,
this is,
I don't know,
very similar gameplay wise to Returnal from the PS5. But I think it's really cool that this game got an Xbox release so that we have something like that on this console.
I never played Returnal, but I did have a lot of fun with this. I just wish they like shook up the, you know, the location, more than just like the same metal walls and, you know,
you're gonna tech and hallway simulator here.
It really is. Like,
I think that's part of the design of this, though, is you're trying to escape and everything looks the same and you just kind of go crazy after a while, and it's bullet hell. So you're dodging in 3D, all these orbs coming at you, or, you know, trying to dodge through them, which is fun as well.
I don't know if I've tried dodging through, like, you mean like the rings and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know if I've ever tried dodging through them. Yeah. I dodge over them. Like, I jump a lot.
Yeah.
Or dash away, but I don't think I've ever actually tried going through. Huh. But yeah, right, well, like the animation's great. The voice acting is fine. You're really here for the action, and there's plenty to be offered in this game.
I will say, if you're not good at shooters like me, you're going to struggle with this. There's not much in the way of any kind of aim assist in this. I struggled with the sensitivity. I had to turn it up and down multiple times to find a sweet spot, and even then, like, I'm still having issues hitting things in this game. I'm just not good at shooters, and it shows in this. And the good thing is with this game. Yeah, my arm is messed up. But I played an hour of this, which is the most I've played of anything in like a month.
That's good.
So, yay! We got to talk about price on this one, which caught me off guard. Right now, the game is $59.99 on everything but Xbox, where it is $29.99.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I like this game. I don't know if I $60 like this game. Like, I would recommend, I would have been cool with a $40 price tag on this.
It's $30. That's what I'm saying.
I know that's what I'm saying. Like, wait a sec. Yeah, it's 30 on all the other platforms. It's 60 on Xbox.
I'm looking at Steam right now, and it's $60.
Oh
yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, catching so it's on 30 now. On it's Xbox.
$30 on Xbox, but nowhere else.
Oh yet. God. Oh God. Then yeah, totally buy it for $30. Good Lord. I thought you were saying it was 60. My bad. I apologize.
Original release on PlayStation and Steam was $60. It's still $60 on PlayStation as well. So jeez. I'm assuming they're going to drop the price of those versions maybe in the coming weeks. But as of now, if you're interested in this game, the no-brainer option is to get it for $30 on Xbox.
Yeah, definitely.
Half price compared to the other platforms. maybe that's our bonus for having to wait an extra bit of time after the other platforms, but I hope it does well. Great to see this game come to Xbox. Great to see Idea Factory supporting Xbox with a couple more releases. I hope they keep coming. I hope they do well enough to warrant more releases. And it's Play Anywhere, so you get it on PC as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, official verdict, $30.
$30, absolutely.
Cool. Next up, Karma, The Dark World, developed by Pollard Studio, published by Wired Productions. Released September 10th, Series X and S and Xbox PC for $24.99. The year's 1984. The place is East Germany, and things are not quite what they seem. You're Daniel, a Rome agent for Leviathan's Thought Bureau. Okay. And you have been brought in to investigate actions that have happened in a very specific moment in time. A moment which opens the mind to a world of espionage and betrayal, littered with deep and dark secrets. Bree, you've been excited for this one for a while. It got a delayed release on Xbox. You finally got your hands on it. Was it worth the wait?
Absolutely. Like you said,
all right, I've been waiting 20, for this 15, game. No. Verdict.
No, but I've been waiting for this to come to Xbox for what seems like forever. It's finally here. I was first drawn to the visual style of the game shown in trailers that reminded me of David Lynch's Red Room, mixed with some other themes I was familiar with from dystopian media. And this is set in a dystopian 1984 and has a lot of similar themes to the novel 1984. We wake up in a hospital bed with tubes attached to us, and we have some kind of wires embedded in our skull and arms. When we look out the window, we see that we are someplace called a memory town, which is interesting because we seem to have lost our memory. And things like cars and stop signs are glitching everywhere, and there's a dead body on the street corner outside the window. And we make it to this weird room with TVs, and we're addressed by a computerized voice as a special agent. The game proceeds to put us through a very meta little calibration tutorial for game settings as we make our way through the rooms to the Leviathan Corporation Thought Bureau. And we're some kind of special person who can traverse the other worlds. We find that our name is Daniel, from the human in the wheelchair who submerges us into liquid, into the dark world, hoping we will succeed where others have failed. We have to find audio tapes to figure out our memories with our trusty Walkman. A lot of the story is told through readable documents we find in addition to cutscenes and environmental storytelling. The Leviathan Corporation seems pretty evil right away. In the 60s, they did some kind of experiments with people, and the world changed. There are social levels with credits and demerits for your actions. It's all about your loyalty to the company. At least in Daniel's memories of the past, people have TVs for heads. Some people are normal. And they're afraid of the all-seeing eye known as Mother. And there's cameras everywhere. We spend the first part of the game reliving the past, trying to get context about Daniel's involvement with the Thought Bureau as a Rome agent, going into people's minds to solve crimes and what all that means. In this first case, we remember that we get a sense of the world and the company and the Rome agent's powers, but we also take a trip into the weird and dark, and I'm totally here for that. It seems that there's a monster about, and only a few people know about it. There's the substance called Dacian that changes people and makes them susceptible to things like psychic abilities and the ability to traverse into other people's minds. And I don't want to tell you too much about the story and ruin it for you, because it's fantastic. it's weird and wonderful. The story of this game gets deeper and darker the further you go down the rabbit hole. What this game does in atmosphere almost makes up for its fumbles. Visually speaking, it is a beautiful game. The game does dark well. So you know how you watch like older movies and games and the black is all pixely? This game does not have that problem at all. And that's a good thing, because the whole game is pretty dark. The art design is fantastic. The use of color and patterns to make striking landscapes was a treat. I really just wanted to explore every little corner of this world. The audio is done really well. Directional mastering, it's really great for headphones, for immersion. You'll hear your footsteps, the thundery weather and rain, in addition to the light soundtrack. to spur you on when you work through the environment and puzzles, and then raise suspense as you get into more tense areas of the game. Soundtrack is great. The controls were a little off at first for me. You use the right trigger to interact with most things, X to bring up your inventory. The game is somewhat tactile, though. You use the right trigger and the right stick together to open doors and drawers and move stretchers and things like that. You walk everywhere and slow. It helps keep the pacing of the game a little slow, but I get the decision. It was distracting at first, though. There are no jumps outside of what happens in plot scenes, like if you walk up to a air conditioning vent or something, it'll allow you to automatically just like climb into the vent because that's what you're supposed to do. Game auto saves, but you also have save slots that are audio cassettes, and there are automatic subtitles. So some good accessibility things for that. The game has quotes from Ralph Waldo Emerson, 19th century philosopher, and Khalil Gibran, a 19th century Lebanese poet, and others at the beginning of each act. I found them to be insightful to the story and a nice addition to the vibe of the story. There are collectibles. For the 100% completion, you'll need to find all the memos and things to complete your memories, as well as some little statues of rule followers. I'm not sure yet if you'll be able to find missing ones later on in different playthroughs, if it'll count for the completion or not, or if you have to get it in one. I have not replayed the game yet. I think I'm pretty close to the end now, but I have not gotten 100% to the end of the game. Let's talk about the bad. There were some frame rate issues right at the start of the game. It's stuttering and it sucks, but I got used to it and tried to not let it ruin an otherwise fantastic game. These performance issues are on the Xbox version only right now. And ouch. They have been addressed. Yeah, they've been addressed by the dev and publisher teams. They are working on a fix, but apparently it's a complicated one. And they have made the digital art book free for everyone on shop.wirelessproductions.com until the Xbox fix comes through.
That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, the references to dystopian fiction run deep. I saw a bit of the movie Brazil by Terry Gilliam, 1984, obviously, David Lynch references. But they do this somehow while making a unique world to engage with. When not bogged down by performance issues, the visuals were stunning, the story was captivating and strange and really pulls you in for the immersive experience. With its stellar audio and storytelling style. Sometimes the pacing felt a little slower than I wanted, and yet when I allowed myself to get lost in the world, I was having a great time. So yeah.
Jazzy bananas. The game clocks in at $24.99. It is on sale. How many more days is this? For another week and a half or so, for $19.99. $25, what's your verdict on this one?
I am still going to give this game a buy it despite the performance issues. I felt like this game was pretty solid as a psychological trip. I believe in the dev and publisher team to get those performance issues fixed fast. If you can't stand the stutter, just follow their socials and wait for a fix and then buy it. It's a great deal. You're getting a lot of game for $25. And if you want to get it now and save yourself a couple bucks, you know, bonus. Show your support for the team. I believe that they're going to get those performance issues fixed.
Well, let's talk about saving some money because they have some bundles available. You can get Karma, which is $25, along with either Close to the Sun or Those Who Remain for $29.99.
Wow.
You can get Karma with Deliver Us the Moon for $34.99.
Okay.
Or Karma the Dark World and Martha is Dead for $39.99.
Well, that is a lot of really freaking cool games. Close to the Sun is fantastic.
It's basically I would go for that $5.
Yeah, I would go for that bundle right there. That's a good deal.
So, worth the money, yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Very good. Next up, Arcade Archives 2, Mock Breakers, developed and published by Hamster. Released September 3rd, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5, $16.99. Mach Breakers is a sports game released by Namco Limited, currently Bandai Namco, in 1995. Bandai Namco. What the hell did I say?
Bandai Namco?
Wow. Yeah,
that was a dyslexic moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Superhuman Sports series continues with the sequel to Newman Athletics, now featuring 7 athletes and 12 kind of events. The action is even more intense. Break the sound barrier and shatter expectations. Jacob, what's going on in Mach Breakers?
Did we lose you?
I forgot to take myself off mute after Bree's review. So... what? I'm kind, and I don't, like, you know, I don't want, you know, me being like blocking up her review, you know, in the background. So I mute myself. You're welcome.
Jacob, what's going on in Mach Breakers?
That is an excellent question, because this is a bizarre arcade game that I don't ever recall seeing this in any arcade I've ever been in. I've never even heard of it until now. And yeah, so it's a sports game where people from all over the world, you have all these different characters, and each of them have like certain ability traits that, you know, makes them better than somebody else. But you choose who you're going to be, and there's like 7 or 8 different events that you can choose from. One of them's obviously like a race, and what you have to do is you have to hit 2 buttons to make it so your guy's legs move, and then you just run as fast as you can. There's another one where you have to fire bullets at stuff. Yeah, it's just all these different activities, and it... like, I just don't even know how to exactly, like, I can't see this ever coming over to America. Like, it...
What are the events? Like, what do you do?
So there's, like, so, as I said, like, there are, like, you do, like, a running event. There's another one where you are, where you're having to shoot at stuff, like... near, like, from a distance. It's kind of like, not like skeet shooting, but you know, like, it's more of like a firing range, but it also fires back at you. Like, there is another one where you have to make your guy run and then stop, like, as close as you can to the line.
You're gonna say you gotta collaborate and listen.
Oh, yeah, sorry, no. But, like, you have to, like, jump from one place to another, punch rocks, like, punch all these different objects and stuff. And it's just, it's odd. Like, it's one of those, you really just got to see the videos of it to understand what the heck I'm talking about.
It almost sounds like you're describing Olympic events.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, even though it's set on Earth, it's all like all of these
futuristic people Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I guess you could call it like Olympics for the X-Men or something like that. But
the X Games.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's an odd game, and I feel like it's even odder that this was like an arcade release. I can't, like, I guess I could see it getting released over in Japan. Like, I mean, I've seen what gets released over in Japan. So, I mean, this doesn't exactly surprise me, but I can't see this ever having been brought over, to the US. Like, it's, yeah.
I don't remember seeing this one ever, really.
I've never, like, I never even heard of it. Yeah.
And I've never heard of Newman Athletics either. I'm guessing they were both just Japanese releases until basically now.
According to Wikipedia, Mach Breakers only got a Japan release in January 1995.
Oh, there we go. Game got ported for the first time on home consoles, part of the Arcade Archive series, and it is here. Even crazier, it's up to four players local. So if you got friends, you can compete in the weirdest shit you can.
Bold that you assume that, like, any of us have friends.
$16.99, what do you think?
I will always support the Arcade Archives series. This is an odd one, and I don't think it's going to be for everyone. If you're a diehard for this series like me, then yeah, go ahead and get it. Otherwise, this might be one to wait for a sale, but at the same time, Arcade Archives almost never goes on sale anymore, so you may just be, you know, you may just want to watch a YouTube video of gameplay first before you try to plink down $16.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for an entertaining, functional game, this one is kind of borderline. Basically, it's an arcade game meant to drive you nuts. So,
yeah,
if you are looking at this as like a historical kind of thing, and you're a collector of games you don't normally see in our area, I think $17 is a bargain for this. It all depends on what kind of gamer you are, really. So,
yeah.
Next up, Gloomy Eyes, developed by Fishing Cactus, published by Untold Tales, released September 12th, Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $24.99. In a world plunged into eternal night and torn by conflict between the living and the undead, one faint glimmer of hope still flickers in the hearts of two special souls. Gloomy Eyes tells the tale of Gloomy, a sweet zombie boy, and Nina, a mischievous human girl who defy the rules by teaming up and embarking on a quest to bring back the daylight. But can they coexist? Bree, what is going on in Gloomy Eyes?
So I like the quote in the store write-up, a self-co-op adventure. In this, you play two different characters and you can swap between them to solve puzzles. You start out playing as just the zombie boy named Gloomy, and you have only a few things you can do. You can pick up bones and rocks and throw them, for starters. And then the light is bad for you, and it'll kill you. Eventually, we meet Nina, a human girl who isn't quite like the other humans. She's curious about the world around her, and more importantly, she's curious about Gloomy. Gloomy isn't like the other zombies either. But Nina wants to find out what happened to the sun when the zombie apocalypse occurred. And she's gonna do that. Mechanics wise, Nina can do a little bit more than Gloomy. Her downside isn't the light as much as it is getting caught by her uncle and his minions. We're dealing with zombies and toxic sludge, you know, human stuff. She wants to be free to explore and solve problems, not be stuck in a tower waiting till adulthood to be sent off to hunt the zombies. So she escapes. Between the two characters, they can throw or haul items. Nina can use some items like tools. Gloomy can lift heavier stuff like coffins and doors. And there are yellow markers where you can jump up on platforms like steps and logs and things. They both have some stealth sections or mechanics that they encounter for different reasons. And usable items glow in a certain way to let you know that they can be interacted with. A basic puzzle example might be to move a light with a stick so that Gloomy can move past and get a fuse that he needs to hand to Nina so she can insert it into a box and press a button. Or Gloomy might have to move a locker so that Nina can jump higher and get a key to give to Gloomy so he can unlock a door. And that's how they work together. Accessibility options include some controller remapping, text speed variables, dyslexic font. Yay for accessibility options.
Very good.
The art is Burton-esque. It looks like claymation. The world is 3D, but you have fixed camera angles in small segments of the spooky island you're on. You can use the right stick to look around. But more importantly, you have the diorama view on your select button that zooms out to the whole island you're on. And you can see the hidden paths and different angles by rotating the map in diorama mode. The story is told through voice-acted narration that was really well done. The music was creepy cemetery music mixed with, like, music box plinks, where it changed a little for a magic fairy forest full of mushrooms. All the music was cute. There are 14 chapters to the game and a chapter select on the main menu. Hallelujah. You are going to need to use the chapter select to get all the achievements, because there are no achievements for completing the levels, only for finding secrets and collectibles. There's a gravekeeper to find and some kind of memento as in every level, as well as goofy things to do in each chapter. You might need to open the door on a zombie in the bathroom, or knock one unconscious, or find some human minions slacking off playing checkers in the woods, as some examples of achievements. You can also reload your last checkpoint. The chapter select will show you which collectibles you're missing. There's even a section of the menu after you start a save game that will show you the mementos you've unlocked, so you have an easier time finding which ones you're missing later. But yeah, the mechanics and puzzles are fun in this. The art is darling. The music is fun. The whole game has a good spooky vibe to it. The gravekeeper as the narrator was pretty nice. And the story was well told. I liked this.
Very good. Clocks in at $25. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's a tiny bit steep, like $5 cheaper, and I would be happy, but I'm going to give this game a buy it anyway. I thought this was really well done.
Very good. Aki, what are your thoughts on this one?
I liked it.
Gunpla. They do a good job.
It's all right.
Boobs. Next up, Rally Arcade Classics, developed by NetK2 Games, published by NetKDOS, released July 1st on Series X and S for $19.99. Just recently got a brand new update and some discounts on various platforms. Rev up your engines. It's almost time to race back to the past with Rally Arcade Classics, including 44 iconic cars from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 00s. Aughts. The 48 thrill. What?
The ooze.
The ooze. Like the OOs. The 48 thrilling tracks to rev up their engines to the max while drifting every close turn. You'll never run out of challenges to take upon. Jacob, tell us what is going on in Rally Arcade Classics, and what is going down in this new update?
So, Rally Arcade Classics seeks to emulate the feeling of playing rally games back on like PS1, PS2 era. The graphics aren't flashy. Controls are a little like tankish, but you know, serviceable. It is like, this is not a game that's going to be blowing the doors off of anyone. Oh, however, doors,
like a car.
Yeah, yes, thank you.
I get it.
However, there's still plenty of gas in this engine.
Gas in the tank. God.
I honestly really just enjoy watching your exasperated face on the live stream.
I'm going to turn this show around and go home.
All right. So anyway, so there's different formats of races that you can do. You can do time trials. You can do like one-on-one. You can enter in like actual races. There's a couple of other formats, but then it also goes into like, do you want to do like an actual tour where you have to like, you know, like a cup or whatever. There's not really. There's no real story, but like you're just progressing through it. Like once you get all gold medals, you can move up to the next driving class level. And the thing is that it's not particularly hard. The game is not very challenging. I mean, there were a few times that I got second place, but honestly, you know, you could just reset the game and then try again. Going off of whatever you messed up on last time, and it's real easy to fix your mistakes once you have an idea of what the track is. Now, these tracks, honestly, that's part of the problem with this game. They are short. Like, it is just...
How short are they?
Like, there are a couple of races, especially at the beginning, that you can complete in, like, a minute.
Ugh.
And, like, it's one lap.
Huh.
Yeah, and so, you know, not like all of these races are quick and zippy, which that's kind of nice. But at the same time, you then also get the feeling of like there's not a lot of substance to this game because it's just like bam, 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 bam. It's not bad. Like, I mean, Rally fans, I think, might find something to like about this. But regular casual racing fans, like, unless you're there for the achievement points or because you want a racing game that you don't have to think too hard on, like, this isn't bad. It's just meh, you know?
Yeah.
There was an update to it, as you were mentioning, and I believe it actually wiped my save data for the game, or it made it incompatible or something. Mm. So I had to restart all my progress, which thankfully, you know, as I said, the races are all super short, so it really didn't take me that long to get back to where I was. But yeah, like, I know one of the things that they rattled off that are in the new update is an improved speedometer, which
I'm going to be honest, it comes with manual transmission mode. So instead of just being automatic transmission, they have the manual mode, and with manual mode comes an updated speedometer and in-game interface.
I never used manual. I'm an automatic guy myself.
Same.
And,
even in real life, I can't figure that shit out.
Yeah, no, I don't want to figure that shit out in real life. I mean, I could do it for games, but
like, can't find them, grind them.
Yeah. So the thing is that it's just like, I didn't really notice all that much of a difference other than I was missing a save file, and it didn't, like, it wasn't like it really played that much smoother. Like, and I'll be honest, the speedometer never really mattered for me in this game. The races are too short. Like, so I guess if you're driving manual, I guess that matters. But if you're just doing automatic, like, you're not even going to notice it.
Well, the manual feature is actually like the highly requested feature behind this update for the people want that additional challenge. Obviously, like, that's out of our league. I can't handle that. But for the people who want the challenge, not only is it there, but they actually updated the leaderboards to show whether your score is automatic or manual. And there's a friend list that they added, so you could follow like 20, 25 other people, something like that. I don't know. And then they updated the leaderboards and stuff like that. The global rankings.
That's actually really cool. And like, there is like a sizable amount of people on there.
Yeah.
This isn't just like some humdrum indie fart in the pan. Like, there are lots of people that play this game.
Indie fart in the pan.
Yeah.
I'm judging.
I stand by it.
Judging you for that one.
I'm standing by it.
The game, normal price is $20. It is available for a range of prices right now, depending on the platform, from 10, 12, 16. Xbox is supposed to be getting a sale shortly, I believe. Right now it is $20. Official price is $20. What are your thoughts for $20?
$20, honestly, I wouldn't be upset with. Like, it has a nice retro feel and it plays decently. Just if like you're a huge graphics person, you're not going to get blown away by it, but it's serviceable at what it does.
Gotcha.
Next. Alternatively, your mileage may vary.
Hold on. Got a button for this. Getting there.
It's going to be the crickets. Ah, okay.
Oh, right. Mixing it up.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was going to be crickets. I like the ducks.
Me too. Next game to talk about, Particle Hearts, developed by Underwater Fire Games, published by First Break Labs. Released August 25th, Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Enter a world made entirely of particles. Use special abilities to manipulate those particles, solve puzzles, avoid detection, and uncover the role you play in this sinister and beautiful land. Bree, do you have the smarticles for these particles?
I think so. So this game has heart. It's like a meditation.
Particles.
The music is awesome. Yeah, particle hearts. The art style is that everything is made out of particles, dots. And you can see through the clouds of animated dust turned into form, and it's beautiful. There's tons of movement in the game, from swaying vegetation to butterflies, and of course, moving particles. There's a cinematic intro that gives you a little of the story. The story is then told in little narration snippets as you find wind chimes. Finding the wind chimes will help you navigate the landscape, and you can hear them too. The narrator that we're talking to communicates to us through the chimes. It's a big, big mechanic in the game. The land was in harmony once. Now things are out of balance. We need to fix that. And we need to keep trying until we succeed. We find out that our hero was a farmer. He has some kind of antlers and a mask on his face. We meet other strange creatures on our journey. Mostly you'll find deer and wolves with powers to give you or lead you along. This is third-person exploration. Usually the camera is 360 degrees, but sometimes it will focus on an area and lock you in for a short period of time, which took some getting used to. You have a little platforming to do. You can jump and dash, and there are little boosts you find in the landscape that'll help you move faster through the space and across obstacles. And then there are these doorways you can find that will take you to little side levels with puzzles and platforming. Inside the side levels, you'll find temples to unlock its secrets, and you'll get a little memory core or something like that for your trouble. And you need these doors, these little side levels, to finish the actual level. Once you do, you'll get some kind of little scene that will lead you to where the exit is, and you can exit the level. But you want to get all of the collectibles, meaning those wind chimes, because there's achievements for that. The landscape Yay. In the main game is mostly fantasy grasslands with rocks and trees, or there's caves with mushrooms. There are around 8 chapters to complete the game, each with different titles and themes to them. Achievement goals include collectibles and doing some specific tasks in a timed fashion. There is a chapter select, so you don't need to stress about doing all the things in your first run through. Yay! And each chapter brings something a little new to the table, like new mechanics where you can walk through partial walls with a power, or just new design choices or, you know, landscape values. It's just a really pretty game.
It is. I'm looking at screenshots of this and like, shit, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I really love the art style in this. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts? Anything else you want to say about it?
Yeah, the vibe of this piece is really thoughtful and chill. The game is an enchanting meditative piece, but not without its action. Between the music and the ambiance, like the wind rustling through the trees and the wind chimes you'll need to find in the levels, I definitely recommend immersing yourself in the game with some headphones. I'm looking forward to going back and cleaning up collectibles and just, you know, playing the game more. It's enchanting.
Very good.
I think it's the first thing I played this week, and it was like after getting over being sick, it was like perfect, like immersion for me to just sit and play for like 4 hours.
Shadowblade asking side question for the game being discussed. The gameplay, is it mostly story focused or more for achievement hunters?
I wouldn't call this an achievement hunting game. I mean, it's beautiful and you can probably get through most of the achievements fairly easily, but no, this is definitely more for the story and the ambiance, to enjoy the puzzle solving and the platforming. It was a delightful meditative piece for me.
Saint and Aville. Those are later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, I don't think we have any with Aki being out.
Oh, bummer.
Hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
$20. Did I ask?
I'd say buy it.
I don't have smarticles today. Shout out to my sister, Mary, for that word.
Okay.
Yeah, she made that up.
Nice.
Smarticles. And shout out to Jacob for not once saying sharticles.
That's because I was muted at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to say it?
Sharticles.
Next game, U-Boat, developed by Deepwater Studio, published by Ultimate Games. Released August 27th on Series X and S for $29.99, hitting the PS5 September 17th. U-Boat is a primarily crew management game where your success depends on leading your men, not manually controlling the submarine. In U-Boat, you control the crew in order to control the boat. You look after their physical and mental health because if the sailors are hungry, tired, and their spirit is low, there's no chance of winning even a skirmish. The crew at Ultimate Games hooked us up with codes of this and the next game we're going to talk about. I know we hooked up some viewers with U-Boat on a previous episode tonight. We're hooking people up with Hellstuck, courtesy of Ultimate Games. U-Boat is the topic at hand right now. Jacob, what is going on in U-Boat?
So U-Boat is an interesting game. Some might even say unique.
Unique.
I haven't played anything like this before. So what it is that you are playing as the role of a U-boat captain, and what? You have to, yeah, it's true. You are in control of a U-boat in this game.
Not a yacht.
Not a what?
A yacht.
Oh. No, not a canoe. Yacht. I thought you. No, nor a kayak.
Wooden raft.
I believe that's upcoming DLC.
Cool. You said a U-boat in this, huh?
Yeah. So hope that you're okay with playing as the enemy.
Or but anyway, exclamation U-boat.
So anywho, so you are a U-boat captain and you can decide, and it's going to be real weird saying you a lot during this review. anywho. Yeah. So you can decide. Such a dumb joke. All right. Anyway.
Went with I-boat. Apple getting in the game.
Apple to you. No. All right. So anyways, so you can make decisions about your crew, like what they look like. I mean, like the game really lets you decide whether you want to like just, you know, mess around and like captain a U-boat and not really have to worry about anything or actually follow a story. Who wants to do that? Or you can get super in depth into your crew, and you could do customization in it, like of everything that they look like. And as you're doing this, there are different kinds of models. There are different models of U-boats in this, and you can decide whether you want to begin the game early in the war or later in the war. If you do it early, you're going to have an easier time. But if you do it, because you know, the tech isn't there to like, you know, sink U-boats as much as it was towards the end of the war. But if you start it up at the, towards the end of the war, you've got more access, to better tech, which, you're going to be constantly upgrading your U-boat with. Because as the war goes on, you know, your government's going to develop stuff, or sometimes you can have your crew like invent new things to do it. Or like sometimes your crew will have to like get off, at a port somewhere and, you know, go off and work at some government office for a bit. During this, between each of your missions, you can also like, there's stuff that happens in between there. Like, I mean, there's weather issues, but also you can pick up like survivors, or sometimes you can go looking for cargo. And you have to make the decision, like, do you bring these survivors on? Do you take all this cargo on? And at the same time, you also then need to also, like, you need to manage your crew too, because if your crew like hates life aboard the U-boat, then like, you know, they're not going to perform as well. Or if like they're not getting fed properly, like, you know, obviously you can't fight on an empty stomach. And so you have to manage like the crew's emotions. You have to manage like their care. Also like along with like who gets healed first. You know, and then when when your U-boat gets damaged, you know, what order are you repairing stuff in? If you get into the nitty gritty side, I'm not going to lie. If you're coming in without ever having played anything like this, if you go right into the nitty gritty stuff, it's hell. I recommend starting on the easier mode. But there are also tutorials that you can do, which will help, explain how everything works for you. You just have to sit through them and do them properly.
All right. We got some questions. First up, Horaclite wants to know if it is a boat full of sheep because it is a U-boat.
No. There's Bree. No sheep on there.
Bree, did you think that was a bad joke?
It was very bad.
Yeah. Shadowblade asks, is the game in the perspective similar to that of Fallout Simulator or Fallout Shelter? Or is it more of a first-person game in which you explore the U-boat as a captain?
So it's more of like you can explore through and move the camera through it. Like, I know what you're talking about with Fallout Shelter. And that is more of a like mobile game or even like Sim Tower esque kind of looking thing. And this one's more, it takes advantage of the 3D environments.
Gotcha.
Like it's a beautiful game to look at. I can't see it being like a mainstream success, but the people who love this kind of stuff, I think they're really going to dig it.
Shadowblade, do you have any other questions for Jacob about this one, as you have expressed interest in this game? So if you have any other questions, let us know. And Jacob is our monkey. We will make him dance for you.
YMCA.
Jacob has the smarticles for this one too.
Mm-hmm.
the sharticles.
Yeah. $30 on this one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely worth $30. If you're a much more casual person, this might be a hard sell. But if you really like getting in depth with everything, then I think you're gonna find a lot to like in this one.
Shadowblade asked about combat scenarios.
Yes. So like sometimes you'll just take on like normal destroyers. Sometimes you can actually try to sink a convoy. You have to gather intel about stuff, and a lot of it also is strategy in that regard, as to how you're going to attack, when you're going to attack, because part of it, I mean, is honestly, it's a waiting game you wait till nightfall to really fuck up your opponent on the, or like the opposing side. It can get tense too, at times, especially if your crew's not doing well.
Yeah. Like us, we're not doing well.
No. I mean, at least we're not going hungry.
Going hungry. No one else? No one's going to back me up on that? I can't get Chris Cornell in here?
I got a message from Aki. She's finished building the legs of her model kit, and then she finished Silent Horror. She said specifically to tell Joe that part.
Oh, what'd she think?
I have no idea. I'll ask her.
Aki. next up, Hellstuck Rage with Your Friends, developed by Terror Dog Studio, published by Ultimate Games, released September 9th, Xbox One and Series X and S for $9.99. Hellstuck Rage with Your Friends is a punishing platforming game where you start in the deepest depths of hell and must escape. But the way out is a long way up, and the only thing in between you and escape is how much rage you can endure. Bree, based on the description, I'm guessing this is a hellish game to play.
Welcome to another rage game. Unless you actually like this kind of game, I'm sure you know where this is going. What makes this one slightly different, though?
Hold on, we got to remind people, if you do like rage games, type enter in the chat, and you can enter to win a copy of this. Courtesy of Ultimate Games, we'll give away a copy at the end of the show. So stick around. And if you're listening to this on YouTube or Spotify or Amazon or any of those things, hang out with us on Twitch.
Yeah, you're missing out.
Give shit away.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ultimate Games. All right,
what makes this one slightly different is that you can play local split screen and rage with your friends. See who puts their fists through the TV or snaps the controller in half first, and then have a good laugh over who gets to pay the bill to fix it all. My first personal introduction to this genre of game was Jump King. More recently, another game from this same publisher, Diamond Hands to the Moon, was something that I played. So I've got a couple of these under my belt now. So what sets this one apart from either of those? I will tell you. First off, the music is pretty fabulous. The pixel art is great. There's a hardcore mode if you want even more challenge, and the aforementioned split screen option. This takes place in Hell, the 9 levels of Hell, and so the art is dark and totally my style. There are spooky monsters in the background, dim lighting, people being tortured, and more I've yet to discover because I'm just not good at these games. There are 9 levels to clear and hardcore mode to get the game completion. Controls are a little rough. You have to move with the D-pad and jump with A. A is a variable jump. The longer you hold the button, the higher you jump within a certain limit. And then you can walk a little bit with the D-pad, but to move while you jump, you'll have to hold the D-pad in the direction you want to go. Levels are pretty short, and it was easy to get the hang of it, at least the first level. But one wrong jump, and you could have to start all the way back at the bottom. You start to employ some interesting tactics the higher up you get, and you realize in order to make a jump, you might need to jump the wrong way to bounce off of a platform. Getting good at this game is hard for me, though. I gave it a good try before I quit. Honestly, the biggest thing spurring me on in this one was the music and the backgrounds that changed every level and had me curious what was coming next. Those two things were so well done. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about the game.
For those who remember, same devs as Diamond Hands to the Moon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How does that make you feel?
I like this one better. I like this one fairly a lot, in fact, in comparison to any of the other games I've played in the genre.
Ragey enough for you?
Yeah. But there I liked the art style. I liked the pixels, the graphics. I liked the music. It was a good package.
Very cool. Game clocks in at $10. If you pick it up in the next week and a half or so, you could get it for $7.99. But for $9.99, what is your verdict?
This genre is not for me, but this game in particular was pretty awesome, so I'm going to overall give it a try it. But I'm going to say, if you like this style of game, this genre, I would say it's a buy it. I thought this one was really well done, and I've played a lot of these games now. I just finished another one that we're going to talk about next week.
Yay!
Yay!
Next up, Attic Archive, developed by Imagine Software, published by Pixel Games, released September 2nd on Series X and S for $7.19. Weird price. The Attic Archive presents a curious collection of forgotten games from the 80s, originally published for the Commodore 64, Amstrad PC, and Sinclair ZX Spectrum home computer systems. These games are authentically reproduced in all their 8-bit glory, featuring classics from Ocean Software, Arctic Computing, Imagine Software, and Atlantis, with platformers, shooters, exploration games, and more. Whether you're a seasoned retro fan or a new gamer curious about the games of yesteryear, the Attic Archive has you covered. Jacob, what is going on in Attic Archive?
So Attic Archive is a collection of older computer games for like the Commodore 64 and the ZX Spectrum. And these are games that probably, like, for a, like, at least a lot of, I would assume, people stateside, because I know those were bigger over, like, a lot of those systems were bigger over in the UK and Europe. So there's a lot of these that I feel like a lot of us will not have heard of. And so,
Chris, pretty much probably heard of everything on that.
That's all right, but that's Chris, though.
You know, if he had an Xbox, he'd be the one covering this, right?
Yeah, I know. Anything retro, I know.
Yeah. So there's 13 games in this package. Do you want to go down the list, or do you want to just, like, hit some highlights?
We could go down the list.
All right. Let's go down the list on the store page. Diddums, Escape a Dangerous Toy Box as a Teddy Bear.
I hated this game. I absolutely hated this game. I thought it sucked. All right. So you play as, and, like, and I'm so angry about it, just thinking about this game. You play as
it, about, like, that name.
Diddums.
Diddums.
So you play as this teddy bear who got separated from his baby, and you need to go to your baby to console them because they're crying. And so you have to get out of the toy box. And by doing this, you have to grab, like, you have to walk around the on the screen and pick up these pieces of the ladder, and you have to pop them in a certain way. And so you get the ladder. You also have to grab it, like, a certain item. But at the same time, there's other toys who are trying to prevent you from leaving. And so you either need to shoot them or just dodge their attacks. And I friggin' hated this game so much. Like, cool. It
Arcadia, shoot down waves it, of there's 13 of these. We gotta
right, do, like, right, quick sorry. Summaries. All right.
Arcadia, shoot down waves of deadly attackers.
It's kind of like Space Invaders. It was all right.
We got Armageddon, where you protect cities from falling missiles.
Yeah, it's called Missile Command. We've played this before.
Gasp. E.C. Bill, experience the life as a cartoon caveman.
You have to run around and hunt food and cook it to stay alive.
This isn't related to that old comic strip, BC, was it?
I don't know. Now that you mention it, like, the art didn't look like it, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I love that comic strip so much.
One
of my favorites.
No, it's not related.
Hmm. Gilligan's Gold. Gather gold in a hazardous mine. Gilligan in a mine? That's not an island.
I don't think it's that Gilligan.
Bullshit.
Well, anyways, you're running around collecting pots of gold. If you're familiar with Apple video games from this time period, like on the Apple IIe and IIc, if you had played EA's Hard Hat Mac, it was similar to that.
Gotcha. Mutant Monty, make your way through surreal environments to find precious treasure.
I have no fucking clue what was going on in this game at any goddamn point.
How about Mutant Monty in the Temple of Doom? Wow, that sounds infringing. Delve the temple and grab artifacts.
The same, too. Except now it's in more of a temple, so you more have an idea of where you're at. But, yeah, I was not impressed with either of these games.
Cool. Mutants, battle bizarre mutant strains to assemble a machine.
Sorry, I thought that was going to go on longer. I took a swig of water. you fly around and collect stuff. It was okay.
Nomad, control an advanced attack droid to destroy a criminal tyrant.
So you fly around and blast stuff in levels that are kind of like mazes. It was all right.
That sounds nifty. Here's one for Bree. Paws, rescue your kittens from dangerous dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, you, like, blast them with I don't know what, but yeah. And you, I mean, it was cat bullets. I don't know. Like,
and do cat guns pretty much, instead of go pew pew go mew mew?
You're pretty much like exploring mazes, trying to find all the kitties.
Nice. Super kid, become a superhero and save the city.
You run around the city and collect stuff. Do you remember Dick Tracy on the NES?
No.
Yes.
All right. It's kind of like that.
Cool. Super kid in space.
It's okay. I mean, if you like Dick Tracy on the NES, then yeah, it'll be up your alley. If you fucking hated that game, no.
All right, super kid in space, save the world from an alien invasion.
A side scroller where you blast stuff in space. It's actually really more planets in space, but you know.
Last one, Skatin' USA, save the city again, this time on a skateboard.
It's a side scrolling adventure where you skate around and you avoid bad guys.
Very good. What's the package like in this? Good bundle? Like a good any extras or UI? What do you think?
So you can play some of the games on different formats that they were released on. And so like, you know, it can be kind of like a, you know, it plays slightly different on, you know, the Spectrum version versus the Commodore. And there's some, you know, there's some other stuff, but this is more scant than what you see like from Limited Run or Night Dive.
Price is also significantly different compared to Limited Run or Night Dive, and that this package is a whopping $7.19. First off, weird price. Second off, for 13 games, that's ridiculously cheap. Is the game collection worth it for that price, or are these games?
Yes. Yes. It's worth it. I mean, I always support stuff like this. I mean, part of being able to enjoy history is not only understanding like the good stuff, but the stuff that nowadays would be considered basic and frankly, not very good. Like sometimes games don't age well, and frankly, some of these didn't. But that doesn't mean that like we shouldn't, you know, still keep them being accessible, like from being accessible. No. Like I fully support a release like this. I'm glad that they did, because I had never heard of any of these games before. And some of them I'm definitely gonna play some more. Like Nomad was a lot of fun. Arcadia was good fun too. So, I mean, like, there's definitely stuff that's worth it in this collection.
You know what else is basic?
You bitch.
Oh, I was going to say your bitch ass.
I beat you to it.
We're besties. Next up, Compass of
Wait. Huh? I have an update from Aki.
Oh?
She said Silent Horror was much better than Parappa the Rappa one, and Excubus was fantastic in it. So there's your answer. I have no idea what you guys are talking about, but I thought I would let you know.
Our friend Tim Ekibis hang out a lot on the Tuesday shows, did movies with a bunch of friends, and I sent them to Aki to watch.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Next up, Compass of Destiny, Istanbul, developed by M11 Studio, published by Five Denes or Denise, I don't know. Released August 29th, Series X and S and Xbox PC for $9.99. 17th century, the Ottoman Empire is at the height of its power, forming a transcontinental realm stretching across Europe, Asia, and Africa. However, it's locked in a deadly struggle with Venice for resources and power centered around the richest of its provinces, Crete. You're an impoverished patrician from Venice. Exiled in Istanbul, the accidental discovery of a mysterious compass sets you on a course for vengeance against the Ottoman commander responsible for the death of your family and your disgrace. Jacob, you feel disgrace all the time, but Bree covered this. Bree, tell us about Istanbul.
Well, first,
oh my God, you made me panic. So much. I'm just like, oh god, I didn't play this at all.
Nope. This is a me game. Let me put on my glasses and get my nerd voice on or something. As a historic reenactor that specializes in Ottoman history and culture, I had to see for myself how much meticulous research was actually put into this piece versus what they claimed. I wanted to know if this was like Assassin's Creed, where the history is done well but then takes a sharp fantasy turn, or something else. There are three difficulties: story, normal, and difficult. You get a character customization, which was fairly limited. The game then launches you into a prologue for the story. In this, you'll have choice points with zero explanation of the ramifications of your choices, aside from icons that look like a fist, a brain, and a heart. I can make some guesses what those mean, but the text was white on transparent gray and was really small, but not small enough to make a good decision because the text was cut off at each choice point. Oh. You're basically choosing a path for your character's skill set, and you can go back and change it after, but there's no telling you that at the beginning when you're told to make this choice. So I don't know why the text was cut off right away, but that was frustrating, like right out the gate. Story-wise, you're a Venetian prince named Carlo, trapped in the middle of a power struggle between Venice and the Ottomans. We survive an attempted coup, only to find ourselves out of power, out of money, and doing scut work on an Ottoman slave ship. And here we overhear about an important book, and of course the Compass of Destiny, that we steal before we escape the prestigious ship of the Ottoman fleet that we've had the fortune to sail to Istanbul on. The story was hard to follow, beyond the big plot points, because the text was so small. Add to that, the voice acting is not in English, only the text is. And the text moves through too fast for the size of it, and in like little speech bubbles above the characters' heads. The game is primarily a top-down view, like dioramas that you can run through and interact with. You can move the camera 360 degrees. It moves a little fast, which was odd. After you get through the intro, the world opens up a bit and you can explore Istanbul, and that's where the game became more fun. There's a day-night cycle out in the world, and there are quest markers to guide you along to your next objective. I would call this an RPG. You have multiple NPCs to talk to and earn favor with, do quests for. You have a bigger story with intrigue. There are multiple familiar mechanics like lockpicking you can do to get by in the game. You have an inventory setup where you can dress your character in various slots for bonuses. You have multiple weapons you can earn and equip, and then switch between with the press of like a quick RB button. Combat's pretty simple. Right trigger to swing or shoot. You can punch with your fists until you get a weapon. If you hold the R trigger or R right trigger, you get a deeper, more powerful swing. I'm like being defeated by my notes here. B is a combat roll. The harder part is really seeing where you're trying to aim in the environment at the top-down angle that you're at, which can be frustrating. I was, however, playing on an easier difficulty, and the combat was very forgiving. You'll pick up foods and other healing items as you go along, and quick, you can open your inventory and eat them for quick hit point increases, or you can equip stuff to your quick slots. You can also learn skills from scrolls and from leveling. There are destructible items you can punch or slash with a sword. There are items you can pick up from destructible objects, like trinkets and gold and well, actually, I think it was bronze coins. There are also exploding barrels you can pick up and throw at your enemies, or shoot with a bow near the enemy to set them off. And then there's poison barrels as well.
Sweet.
Yeah. There
question.
Are,
is it yeah. real-time combat, or is it like Baldur's Gate in that it's tactical?
It is real-time combat, but it has that same like isometric view.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, yeah.
Kind of Diablo-ish, or...?
Maybe a little bit more like Diablo, yeah. I haven't played a Diablo game in a hot minute.
Oh, you should play 4. It's good.
I've been told I should. I just don't know if it's for me. There are some puzzles to solve, some platforming to do, and once in a while, after you steal the Compass of Destiny, you end up in these special realms called Fitra. And I took that as a reference to the path to Allah, but I won't get into that because that's religion. There are random encounters in the world where you can... try to engage with, there's a side quest first thing in Istanbul that has us take on some cut purse gang to make the city a little safer. It gives us a wanted status by that faction and can come back to haunt us later, but it also raises our fame in the city with the citizens. And this is helpful because we're Venetian and seen as an outsider in Istanbul. The game did very little to encourage immersion with their game. There were loading texts that came up every time you went into a new area that just said loading world in big, easy text. Yeah. It took up a chunk of the bottom of the screen. I don't know why they couldn't have made the other text big and readable, but that was easily readable. Icons for stores and taverns were generalized and looked cartoony and generic. It made it help. Like, it helped make it easier to know what I was, that I was walking into a tavern, but it did little for reminding me that I was in 1672 in Istanbul. There was even a little tooltip that broke me out of the action when the dev team basically said, explore the city, have fun. That's a quote. And now that's me nitpicking a bit because of what I wanted out of this game versus what the devs created, and I'm going to admit that now. The other thing that to note that irritated me, if you weren't in the exact right spot, it was impossible to pick up objects or interact with memories with the X button. Sometimes I would interact with a memory and nothing would happen at all. Sometimes I'd be clearly highlighting an object I wanted to pick up and somehow would pick up the object next to it, which was almost always an explosive barrel, which I then needed to walk away with and safely put down away from the object I was trying to pick up. It was comical how often it happened in the intro to the ship alone. The Janissary, Ottoman soldiers, costumes were well done. Others, not so much, historically speaking. There was a lot of research done for the art and artifact and costume of the game and make a good attempt to represent it. And I appreciate that about the game. There was a good amount of proper historical representation in the story and details, and I'm on board for that, especially since it's really close to one of my favorite cultures and times in history. The graphics and music were nothing to write home about. There was a lot more fantasy than history here, but I liked the concept they were going for. Yeah.
That text you have, is so up small. On the screen.
Oh, there's even smaller text. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like I said, there are little speech bubbles that some of the conversations happen just above the characters' heads.
It looks like The Sims in Medieval.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I will say this was not the game I thought it was going to be at first. I thought this was more like a point and click adventure or something like that. But the way you're telling, like, I am interested in this. The exploration, yeah. The real time combat, it sounds like an RPG that I would enjoy, and it's $10. What are your thoughts on this for $10?
All in all, I'm going to give this a try it. There were some good things going for it, and my expectations didn't meet the reality. The game functions as I believe it was intended, aside from some occasional glitchy graphics and some of my nitpicks that I already mentioned. I want to play more of the game, but it's not high on my list to complete, if that helps spell out my feelings about this a little better. But the price is absolutely phenomenal for what this is. So I'm going to go with try it overall.
That's on my wish list.
So, all right.
Let's try something fun. Next game to talk about, Claim the Forest, developed and published by Aphil Games, released September 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Xbox PC, $5 each. In Claim the Forest, you enter a magical clearing where two unusual clans compete for territory, Brave Wolves and Calm Capybaras. Your challenge is to organize the pieces of these animals along with logs, stones, and bushes to fill the board without letting rivalry disturb the harmony. Each piece has a unique shape and can be freely rotated, but beware, if a wolf ends up next to a capybara, a fight occurs and your last move disappears. This is where strategy comes in, using terrain as a natural barrier to create the perfect balance. There are 30 levels ranging from cozy tutorials to challenging puzzles, with extra goals such as using more capybara pieces than wolf pieces, or limiting the number of each clan. Achieving these goals grants special stars that you can progress smoothly even without them. Jacob and Marie, neither of you played this, Aki did, but review it anyway.
Okay.
This is the most confusing visual novel.
Now load up the store. Load up the store. You've seen this game before.
What? I was going to say, it sounds like another Fit game.
Jacob, what's the name of this game? I'm serious. I'm linking you on
Facebook. I'm serious, too. I'm
linking you on Facebook.
Claim the forest. Okay.
All right, I have it up.
That's what he said.
It looks like another Fit game.
Oh my god, it is. I'm so upset that I didn't play this. Yeah, it is.
Blind. Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to play this. Damn. This is, I love these games. Oh, I'm jealous. Damn it.
So yeah, it's like Legends Aligned where you have the parts that don't match, and so they'll start a fight with each other. But it's like Animal Squabble style with cartoon puff smoke, it looks like. Aww. Yeah. Yeah.
Damn it, I want this.
But otherwise you have to rotate the different pieces and make it fit inside the frame.
Joe, did they send more codes?
No, they never. They send us one set of keys every time.
Oh, I'm sad.
Dude, it's $4. Fucking buy it.
You're $4.
Actually,
it's still on sale for $3.99 right now.
Tell me why you want it, Jacob.
Because I really like. Because with AFIL's games that they regularly shovel at us, like this, like puzzle, you know, where you have to like fit the pieces into like a certain way. Which technically is really how all puzzles work. to be fair, but I really enjoy these games, like the Legends Aligned series, the Fit, what was it, Fit and Fry? Yeah. You know, they're a lot of fun, and like those games are actually chill. And also, I like the ability, like the fact that you don't need like a controller to play them on PC. You could just use your mouse for everything. Yeah, I have a lot of fun with this type of game. I wish AFIL actually made more of this type. I know. And like, I know that they're going to cover every single damn genre under the sun or subject matter, I guess. But it's just like, and so I know it's like you're playing the same game over and over. But whatever, man. It's fun.
Next one will be called Cats and Bananas. And it'll be about cats versus bananas.
Why not cucumbers?
Oh my god.
Cats versus cucumbers.
Shit. Yeah. All right. AFIL, you got a new idea right there. Cats and cucumbers.
Do it.
I'm liking it.
Claim the forest. It is $5. If you pick it up in the next couple of days, you can get it for $4. $5. What's your verdict?
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah.
These games are fun.
Cool. Told you that'd be fun. Next up, Nine Lives to Defend, developed by Golderate, published by Silesia Games, released September 9th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, $3.99. Face a pest infestation and survive until Loki's parents return from their trip. Defend the house with your nine lives, choose upgrades, play with different versions of Loki with unique weapons and abilities to fight this war. Bree, what is going on in Nine Lives to Defend?
It's a cat game published by Silesia. So, of course, I was going to play it. This isn't normally a style of game I go for as a roguelike, but I'm not a stranger to them being a fan of things like Vampire Survivors and Brotato. And this one has cats. Well, it has the same cat. It has Loki, but there are other versions of him from other dimensions like Samurai Loki, Viking Loki, Wizard Loki, Sheriff Loki, and more. And each person has different weapon types and stats for you to play with. When you start a match, you begin with one of eight locations, like the yard, garage, or hall. Other locations you need to do certain things to unlock. When you choose your trip type, then you get either 12 or 24 minutes or an endless mode. Next, you choose your difficulty, which gives you bonuses to your payout for permanent upgrades. Things like playful, snappy, wild, or brutal. And that's the difficulty. And then you set any of the three amulet slots with things like invulnerable dash or set off rerolls. And then you also get modifiers like thorns at the edge of the stream, trash barriers, powerful bosses, and more. And then lastly, you choose your Loki. Some of them require specific tasks to unlock, and then you're on your way. It's a whole lot of things to choose. When you get into your first match, there's a little tutorial that shows you your cards that you earn in a run are limited, like the slots that you have to get them. So choose wisely or reroll. Oh yeah. And you have 9 lives with 3 hearts each. So when you die, your coffin does damage to all the enemies in the area and kills them, leaving you with a clear space to revive with one of your lives. There's like no that. Way to get back your lives, but there are ways to get back to your health, like a food bowl that refills up periodically. When you kill an enemy, you get your kibble, and then you can use kibble that you earn through the match to upgrade your character permanently. It's also what levels you during the run. There is a special attack you can use on the screen that does major damage for a few seconds. You can usually dash, but it's tied to an amulet power. There are so many weapons and abilities to use, like the litter box that gives you temporary safe space while shooting turds at the enemies. You can use an electric fly swatter, a yarn ball that shoots needles, and much more. All cat-themed and fun to discover. Controls are simple. You use the right stick to aim, the left to move. Shooting happens automatically. The enemies almost always are bugs. Like ticks and mosquitoes and things like that. One problem I ran into the game, so minor, in the main menu called the Hideout, where you upgrade your character between runs and check on achievements, it shows a picture of the bumper buttons to change tabs when it means triggers. Small error.
No!
I know, it tripped me up for a bit. The art
How
was cute.
How dare they?
The music wasn't anything to write home about, but it wasn't annoying either. I liked this one.
Very cool. I like their features. Flexible gameplay, modifiable round durations and difficulties, a variety of character classes, and absolute humor, because that's what happens when you leave your cat unattended.
True story.
Absolutely. $4 on this one. If you buy it in the next week and a half, you could save 80 cents and pick it up for $3.19. $4. Verdict.
Do it. I'd say to buy it. Like it's a buy it. Just go have fun. Shoot cat things, or shoot things with your cat. Just, it's very cute. I liked it.
Mew, 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 mew. One final game to talk about tonight, and we're going to Kids Corner. George, take it away.
Kids Corner! With Jacob and friends!
That's right. One last game is Goosebumps Terror in Little Creek, developed by PHL Collective, published by Game Mill Entertainment, provided to us by Game Mill via the partnership with Outright Games Ambassadors Club, which we are ambassadors of. Released August 29th, Series X and S, Xbox, PC, Switch, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Enter the chilling world of Goosebumps in Goosebumps, Terror in Little Creek. Step into the shoes of Sloane Spencer, a young teen caught in a town of nightmares, as you unravel eerie mysteries, confront sinister monsters, and navigate haunted locations inspired by R.L. Stine's legendary book series. Solve puzzles, evade creatures, and uncover the dark secrets lurking in the shadows, all while experiencing the Goosebumps signature blend of spooky adventure and playful twist that has captivated millions of fans, both young and young at heart. Jacob, you're young of mind, so
drop it, Goosebumps!
Terror in Little Creek. And thank you, Goldeneye, for the 100 biddies. Jacob, Goosebumps.
Once, okay, all right. My dog was trying to scratch himself at an odd angle, and I couldn't tell if he was trying to go to the bathroom or scratch himself. So, I, anywho,
Kids Corner, tell us about Goosebumps.
So, do you read Goosebumps when you were a kid?
I did not,
or were
no.
you past that?
I was like in between on that one.
Oh, okay. It got big when I was in third grade, and so I was like at the perfect age for it. Mm. Although I stopped reading around The Legend of the Lost Legend, but anywho. So, in this, you star as this girl and her group of friends who are trying to figure out the mystery of what's happening in your little quiet New England-y town. The police have instituted like a curfew, like nobody's allowed out past 8 p.m. And you're going to get down to the bottom of this because the cops aren't telling anyone ever anything. And so you're going to be traveling for two different parts of the town, talking to various townspeople, some of them good, some of them not so good. And while also dealing with classic Goosebumps characters and some that I'm not quite familiar with because I think they were after my time. So, so yeah. If you're looking for a way to describe it, this is kind of like a survival horror game for kids. I'd actually put it closer to like Alien Isolation in terms of what it is, because you're going to have to move through.
Wait, I got one. I got one. Resident Rated Evil.
No, I wouldn't. Oh, I get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not survival horror like Resident Evil. So, anywho, so you have to like move through all these different locations, pick up objects, be careful not to like set off objects. Like, and of course, you can run sometimes. Other times, you might want to crawl. Other times, you have to hide, like hide underneath a table or hide in a closet. And you have to get various items and talk to people, and you can give different responses. Oh my gosh.
Gotta show the people the artwork, right? I worked hard on this one. I put glasses on your glasses.
I know. What am I, six-eyed? What would that make me?
Anyway.
So, yeah, and there are a few different kinds of enemies that you'll run into. Like, there's these aliens that will just cause basically, like, slash damage. You'll also have a different kind that jump onto you and, like, hold onto your back. And, like, they'll, like, start slashing at you and stuff like that. And, like, you can replenish your health. I will say this, like, the game does, after, like, you know, a big fight area, the game does provide you with a lot of health and a lot of ammo for your slingshot that you use, because that's pretty much your only weapon. Sorry, I'm reading the Twitch stream. Focus. And yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, so you're then just going through the map and going through the story. Like, there's puzzles to solve, which, thankfully, I wasn't the only one on the with the Outright Games Discord who got stuck at the very beginning, because the game has you using your slingshot to take care of these weather vanes, because they'll operate a lot of the outside puzzles. And a bunch of us thought that we had gotten softlocked in the graveyard, like got stuck there. And it turns out, no, you just need to look up and, oh, there's a weather vane on one end of the graveyard. And that's how you open up the door there.
You know, you guys needed more smarticles.
Honestly, what we needed is more help and guides in this game. My youngest was really jazzed to play this. He's 8. And so like, and he has played, stuff like this before. Like he's actually playing the, he's beaten Portal and he's playing through Portal 2.
Wow.
He's played, you know, he knows how to play puzzle games in the first person perspective. And this one, it's just like, he was just like, I don't know what to do with this. And like, I think the game needs, like, especially since it's aimed at kids, I think that there really needed to be some more handholding at the beginning rather than the very simple guides that were provided. Like, I thought, like, the controls were fine. movement during like during the fights. They are tense, and I wish the game accounted more for the fact that it's like a kid's game, because it like it really doesn't take much for your kid to get killed. And granted, it doesn't show it, but it, like, it blacks out and like you hear like the crunch. Like, it's so like
the kid gets, you know, downed. It's corner, right, man. Kid's corner.
But, sorry. But I mean, yeah. So anyway,
they tripped and then blacked out.
And fell into the alien's mouth?
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Anyway. So there is also a deluxe edition of this, and
I was going to get into that with the pricing. Are you ready to talk pricing on this one?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Well, the game itself is $40 on Xbox, Switch, PS5, PC. On Xbox, it is Play Anywhere, so you get it on the Windows Store as well. For $40, was this a triumph?
For $40, this isn't bad. Honestly, I like, if you're hardcore, you might want to like wait for a sale on this as like something to like play in between, like, you know, the next Resident Evil and next Silent Hill releases.
Kids love those games.
Yeah, well, yo, some of the kids that my kids go to school with, good lord. Like, I'm just like, what? Why are you kids playing
corner.
This?
Kids corner.
You are seven. All right. Corner. Anyway. Yeah, my bad.
Deluxe edition. There is a pack with the deluxe edition. If you get the deluxe edition, it's an extra $10. The pack itself is $14.49. Pricing, whatever. It includes 5 frightful wearable monster masks, 5 slingshot skins based on the masks, a 3D model viewer to check out all the in-game characters and details, and a concept art viewer. What are your thoughts on all of that? I guess the monster masks, who they are, is kind of important. You get Slappy, the Attack of the Jack-O-Lanterns, Werewolf of Fever Swamp, the Haunted Mask, and a Lawn Gnome. Which I think the lawn gnome sounds worth it alone.
So essentially you're paying for cosmetics that, as far as I can tell, do not, like, they don't matter in terms of gameplay, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, just cosmetics and visual effects for the slingshots.
Right. And so and then the other thing is the model viewer and the concept viewer, which I'm not gonna lie, I was pretty miffed about. Like, that's something that like games like usually just throw in for fun. Like,
I mean, a lot of those are like $10 upgrades anymore, and they're separate apps.
I don't like
Chronos, that just was a separate app.
That blows my mind. It really does.
Yeah.
Like, but I remember being able to go through like LucasArts games, and like, you know, they'd have like a jukebox of all of the music, and like you'd get all of the art. Like, yeah, charge $15 for this? Come on, man. Well, that should have been in the regular. Lawn,
tell me if it's worth it.
I'm gonna be, what, the game itself or the deluxe upgrade?
Everything.
The game itself is worth $40. I'm not thrilled with the DLC, to be honest. Maybe if the masks and skins made a difference in the game, and like, you know, they granted you extra XP or invincibility or something like that, then fine.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. But if it's just straight cosmetics, no, sorry.
Especially in a single player game, they could have like thrown something cool at you. I don't know.
Like a lost chapter or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But that is it for this episode. We made it through a decent time for how many games we had to talk about tonight. To the two of you for hanging out, being here the whole time. Big thanks to Aki for not coming on and reviewing Claim the Forest and letting you two tackle it for her instead.
That was fun.
That was very entertaining, and Afel's gonna be like, what is wrong with you? Music this episode, we finished with Goosebumps, so how about Tiberian Sons? Goosebumps, Welcome to Your Nightmare.
All right.
Jacob, thoughts?
I have none.
I know. Any final words to end the show?
Pictionary.
I'm really not a fan of Pictionary.
No, Dictionary.
Dictionary. I thought you said Pictionary.
Yeah,
I was reading a Mental Floss article about famous last words of people, and apparently Joseph Wright, a famous linguist, edited the English Dialect Dictionary. His final word was dictionary. There you go.
You're in for a scare.